Okay. Yeah, I think we're good to go now. All right. So, let's sing a few songs. Some that we know. Oh, let's see. Oh, here we go. Kadosh.
Kadosh, 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 Kadosh.
It's awful. Blessed is he who comes to Israel. Or Haba'ah for a woman. Baruch Haba'ah Israel.
Yeah.
Very simple song. And as you can see, Alecha is to you. El is the preposition. And Cha is the pronominal suffix for you, masculine, singular. Alecha, to you. Adonai, to you, Lord. Esa, Esa nafshi. I lift. This is a verb right here. Esa, and the aleph is the prefix. I will lift. This is a future tense, and it's a prefix. The future tense is a prefix form. Remember, and the aleph means I. Okay, and the verb is nasa with a nun. And that dagesh right there, that's the assimilated nun. Esa. I lift my soul. Nafshi. Nefesh is soul. And the hirik yod is, again, the pronominal suffix, the possessive suffix for me, for my soul. Very simple. Alecha Adonai Esa Nafshi. Great prayer, huh? To you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. The preposition? El. El is to. It's the preposition to. You see? And Cha is you. To you. And the yud is, remember you have type 1 and type 2 prepositions? Well, that yud is the type 2 preposition. Okay, this is one of those that just, the vowels are just a little bit different, but it's tu is el and cha is you. Masculine singular. To you, Lord. Lift my soul. Esa nafshi. And I was going to close it, but Kathy is writing something down. Oh, really?
I must have lost it.
Wait. Oh, do you have the whole thing?
Maybe I have one at home.
Well, this is, let me see. This is page, this the top one is. Let me see, that's Alecha Adonai. It's at the bottom of a page. Ka'al Tarog. You see that one? Ka'al Tarog.
Oh, it's right
there. There you go.
Wow. Thank you.
That's why I couldn't find it either. I was looking for it. Yeah, the noon that assimilates you. Remember that. That's one of the features. I think we have something about that in these chapters that we're going to be looking at today. So now, Mina is here, and so I can share with you what's been happening. Okay, this last Sunday, Carl Westerlin told me that Brian Broderson decided to take the biblical languages out of the School of Ministry. Okay, and so that was really disheartening. That was really discouraging, because I've always felt that it was the most important focus of the School of Ministry. And however, Baron Harris, he stepped up to the plate, and he went and he talked with Brian. You know, and so he worked it out so that we can keep the biblical languages. They'll move from the School of Ministry into the Bible College. And, you know, I'd already been thinking about that. I'd already been thinking, well, I should teach the basics of biblical Hebrew in the Bible College, as well as reading Hebrew with Dr. Booth. And but, you know, the extra added bonus of that is that it'll be open for everybody. you know, not just the men that are going to the school of ministry, for anybody who's interested. And on top of that, the graduate school is going to move into the Bible college too. It's already under the Bible college in terms of the degrees that it issues. I mean, so it's just kind of natural just to bring that over into the school to the Bible college too. And what that means is that the classes that they're offering in the Bible college will now be, I mean, in the school, in the graduate school, will now be open to students that are attending the Bible college. You know, and what they'll probably do is they'll have two different tracks. You know, they'll have a master's track, you know, where they're required to do more work, and then, you know, then they'll have just the regular track where you're not required to do all the work that they're required to do. So, I mean, it'll be like two different levels in the same classroom. And I'm going to teach intermediate Hebrew next year for the grad school. I'm excited about that because I'm going to take it to the next level. I'm going to build upon what we've been doing in the school of ministry. And then I'm going to teach, we're going to keep, we could take it to the next level and start working with the process of doing exegesis and then in order to do exposition. Now, what does all that mean for us? Okay, well, here is what the situation will be. Those classes will be offered during the week, during the day. So it's likely that I'm going to teach the basics of biblical Hebrew on Monday, from Monday afternoon, from like 1 to 4. And then probably, I'm not really sure about when I'm going to do the intermediate Hebrew, maybe Tuesday. But Baron wants to make it outside of the hours of the school of ministry so that those guys, see, it'll be an option for the guys that are going to the school of ministry to take the classes for credit in the school of ministry, okay? So they'll have that option. I mean, it'll still be available to them. It's not necessarily that it's been shut down, but it's just that it's moved. And yes. Right. And, you know, a lot of guys that were coming to the school of ministry just for that very reason. I know I did. I mean, I know, I take that back. I came to the school of ministry because God put it in my heart. But when I found out what I had to do with the languages, and it was, that was the most challenging aspect of it. And this year, you know, I mean, what was disheartening to me was because this year, the class that we have in the school of ministry is vastly improved over last year, and that was vastly improved over the year before. So I've seen a greater interest. I've seen even more maturity, you know, in the guys that almost all of the guys are passing right now. There's a couple that, you know, I mean, but that is huge. Most of the guys are doing excellent, and that was the disheartening thing. Is just like, oh man, you know, I mean, we've came this far, you know, why, you know, I mean, Lord, what's going on, you know? So I poured my heart out to God in prayer, you know, it weighed heavy on me, and then I came here, and then I talked to Baron Harris, and it's just like, wow, you know, I mean, it's just like, okay. I'm not sure. Nobody's explained that. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the only rationale that I've heard is that some think that it's not necessary. And, you know, I mean, I would have to agree with that because it's not necessary to have a grasp on the biblical languages in order to study the Word of God, in order to teach the Word of God, in order to do, even to do exegesis. You can do exegesis without having a knowledge and understanding of the biblical languages. The bare minimum that you would need is to know the Greek alphabet, so that you could look things up. But the weakness there is you're always going to be relying upon somebody else's work, and you're not going to be come to a place of having confidence in your own judgment and your own ability to get to the meaning. The real question, I feel, is not whether it's necessary. Okay, I can settle that. It's not necessary. The real question is, will you benefit from it? Will you gain in your knowledge and your understanding of God's Word by studying it in the original languages? Will you benefit from it? Will the people that you're teaching benefit from it? Because you can draw from the original languages the meaning of the text and then convey that to your congregation in your teaching. Whether you explain to them that this is what it says in Hebrew or this is what it says in Greek or not. And the most skillful teachers that I have observed, and I can tell they're working with the languages, they're the ones who don't tell you that this is what it says in Greek or Hebrew. They just explain to you what it means. You know, it's one of those earmarks. It's one of those indicators to me when somebody says, well, in the Greek it says, or in the Hebrew it says, that's just like one of those red flags that this guy has never really studied Greek or Hebrew. Okay, what is he doing? He is just repeating what he read in a commentary, or what he's heard, or he's using software, but he's only defining the word. You know, I mean, he's looking at the lexical entry and looking at all the English glosses, all the English translation values for that word, and explaining, you know, he's picking and choosing, really. But he might be more than likely repeating just what he read in a commentary or what he heard from somebody else. And, but you need to go beyond that. You need to go beyond just defining words, because words are in relationship with other words. There is syntax. And there is context. Words are in clauses and sentences and paragraphs and pericopes, which is a larger block, and even in whole books. You know, I mean, so there's more to working with the languages than just defining it, which is what a lot of pastors do, because they don't really have a good grasp on Greek or Hebrew. Even 1 year of Greek or Hebrew it's not enough. You got to go beyond that. You got to keep working with it. And this is what I encourage guys, is you got to make it a lifestyle choice. You have got to continue working with the languages on a regular basis just for the rest of your life. You know, I mean, you don't just study it and then, because what's going to happen is it's just going to dissipate in your understanding because from lack of use. You know, but it's something that you need to be working with continually, on a regular basis, if not on a daily basis. And it should be, you should always be starting with a language in your Bible study and in your sermon preparation. That's where you should start. But unfortunately, people don't have that training. And I always scratch my head and wonder, man, this guy has been in the ministry for 25 or 30 years and he hasn't taken the time to even learn the basics of the biblical languages. You know, and I just have to scratch my head you know, and wonder at that, you know. And maybe it's just because of the approach, the traditional approach. When you start studying grammar, it's overwhelming, you know. And that's really what I appreciate about Dr. Booth, because it was Dr. Booth's materials that made the biblical languages more accessible to me. It gave me a way of accessing the language. It gave me a way of getting the language inside of me, of actually learning the language and not just learning about the language. I mean, I had a hard time, you know, just like a lot of guys do when you first come into it, and just because you have to learn, you really have to learn two languages when you study grammar. You're learning the language that you're studying, but you're also learning the language that you need to learn in order to talk about the language of grammar. You know, like you need to know what a preposition is and what a preposition does. You need to know adjectives are. You need to know what adverbs are. You need to know what nouns are. You need to know what a dative is and a genitive and an accusative and all these grammatical terms, you know, that are just like, whoa. You know, and they even get, you know, they even get more complicated, you know, as you progress. You know, so, I mean, you're learning more than one language when it comes to studying a language if you don't have that kind of background. Like me and Carlton was discussing earlier about the book, you remember how biblical languages work? Well, I'm thinking about teaching that as a separate course in order to kind of introduce people to the biblical languages. And, of course, how they work, to kind of give them exposure and kind of give them an idea of their options as far as studying the languages go. So I need to work that out with Baron as far as the classes that I teach. But when I really look at it, I'm looking at maybe teaching four classes. You know, the beginning Hebrew, the basics of biblical Hebrew grammar, and the intermediate Hebrew grammar, and then the reading proficiency with the reading fluency classes with Dr. Booth's materials, and as also how the biblical languages work, which would be a good segue into the languages. It would be a good starting point, because, you know, a lot of times people come into those languages without any exposure to any of that kind of thing anyway. But this will give them some exposure to that before they start actually studying the languages. You get exposed to the alphabets and, you know, and some of the language that you'll need to learn in order to talk about the language. So I'm kind of excited for that. You know, I've been pulling the materials together for the other. Now, what does that mean for us? We'll get back to that. On Saturdays, okay, I know that you guys are interested in studying the basics of biblical Hebrew. So what I've been thinking is that if we offer that class on Monday, that you could either enroll in that class, and then we'll have the class on Saturday anyway. So I kind of teach it twice. And it'll also give a guy's an option to get it a second time, you know, if they didn't get it the first time. You know, it might make it more available to some people, especially the people that take classes at night that work during the day. Like, that's why we're here on Saturday, you know, because that's true about us. I did both. I took day classes and night classes. I remember my Mondays were outrageous because I would teach Hebrew in the morning and then have classes in the afternoon and even in the evening, sometimes until 10 o'clock at night. So I was here from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night on Monday. It was just like, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I made it through. Graduating next Thursday. Yes, praise the Lord. But for the summer, okay, I hadn't had any feedback from them about doing a class the summer. But you know, the more I think about it, the more I realize that part three is material that is better utilized by self-direction. by self-study. You know, however, I do see the need to continue working through the summer. And I've hit on this possibility, is that we could review part two. We could work through part two again. Okay? And then I have this. This is called Learn Biblical Hebrew. And this is a textbook that is used primarily in class. And it gets you reading Hebrew. And there, the first 14 chapters, there is a CD with audio recordings. But I think the pronunciation system is a little bit different. They do say vav instead of wa, but the vowels, you know, they make a distinction with some of them. So there is with the recordings it'll be different. But when we work in class, we'll still be using the same pronunciation system. So we could work through this, and at the same time, be reviewing Jonah. And incidentally, though. The materials that I have to work with intermediate Hebrew actually take you through the book of Jonah and the book of Ruth at a more intensive level. Yeah, with that material, you're doing translation, you're doing parsing, but then when you get to Jonah and Ruth, you're working with the other resources. You're pulling out. Pulling from the other resources, so it really takes you to the next level. Which I think that having Dr. Booth take you through Jonah and then through Ruth with 500 friends, and I noticed that in 500 friends, he has two readings of Ruth, one where he breaks it down like phrase by phrase, and then a full reading of Ruth. Which would be excellent for working with that material, where you're doing Jonah and you're doing Ruth, you know. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. So, but for us, we could review Dr. Booth. That's like about 11 weeks, and we could work through this in 11 weeks. The guy's name is John Dobson, and. Learn Biblical Hebrew is the name of the book, LBH, which is kind of like Dr. Booth's Living Biblical Hebrew, LBH. So it gets kind of confusing after that. But they have this promise right down at the bottom. Start reading meaningful verses from the Hebrew Bible after just 2 hours of study. And you remember the what I showed you last semester with the phrases up here? The 10 phrases from the book of Exodus. It was the same people learned biblical Hebrew. That's how I found this, was by searching with that. And, you know, you can look at this, but it's really primarily used in class, okay? Whereas Dr. Booth, the work is primarily at home, you know, working with the materials yourself. You know, and assimilating the language, getting it inside of you. And the 500 friends, when you get to that, is most of that you've already been exposed to in part one and part two. So you're just kind of building, you're laying a foundation for building. And then that takes you to the next level where you're reading larger passages. And then the next step is to begin reading the Hebrew Bible. And it's recommended that you do that with recordings. You know, that you have a text where it's parallel, where you have Hebrew and English, and you're doing it with recordings. And I found a set of recordings by they used to broadcast in Israel. It's an Israeli radio announcer, and it's a lot like Dr. Booth's radio announcer. That he uses for the recording series, because it's clear, it's distinct, it's articulate, It's easy to, it's easy on the ear. It's easy to follow. You know, and by hearing the recordings, you get it inside of you. And it helps to move it along because you're looking at the words, you're hearing it. With the materials that we're right now, we're saying it. So we're building. And does that sound like a good idea? Does it sound like a plan? No. No, it's materials. The one of the materials is the same as the authors of the Basics of Biblical Hebrew, Pratico and Miles Van Pelt, those guys. And you know the final assignment that I had to do this week? That book is the same kind of assignments. There's like 30 different passages that you translate and you parse the verbs. But the other material is Robert Kislam. He's from Dallas Theological Seminary, and that's the one that takes you through Jonah and Ruth. Then we'll also there's also a couple of other books to throw in there for exegesis and Douglas Stewart, which we're going to learn the process of doing exegesis and the different approaches that you can take. Because not everybody is going to do it the same, you know. You look at this and then you adapt it to your own needs and to your own style. But anyway, I'm looking forward to that. I'm excited. I keep pulling together all the resources. I'm just amazed, you know, at how all of that came together. It's like, you know, I mean, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not ready, you know, and this is our own tendency. Oh, no, I got to go back and go through this again. I got to go back and go through this again. I'm not ready. But, you know, sometimes it's ready or not. Here we go. Okay. So why don't we take a break? 10 o'clock, take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll I think we should be able to get through the rest of Dr. Booth's, the final pages. And I'm not sure what we'll do next. Okay, so let's get back on course. Let's see where we left off with Dr. Booth. I think I have it open. Yeah, there we go. And let's name that Binyan 305. Yeah, we kind of looked at how to do the roots, which is really helpful. You know, sometimes so there's the basic consonantal pattern for identifying the different root, the different binyanim, the different stems. They're also called verbal stems. The basic simple form is the pa'al or the kal, which means light and easy. And then you have nifal, which is the passive of the pa'al or the kal. And then you have the pl, and the pu'el is the passive of the pl, and the hit pa'el, which is the reflexive. Intensive, and then you have the hefil and the hofil. The hofil is the passive of the hefil. So you basically, Dr. Booth considers these to be five verbal stems or five binyanim, which are the major verb patterns that you will find in the Hebrew Bible, but some have identified as many as 18. But some of them are just found in just like one form. So, and they may, you know, they may, and sometimes they different grammars will categorize them differently. But these seven are the ones that are taught in the basics of biblical Hebrew. But I think in terms of thinking about them, that Dr. Booth is correct. And the three at the top are the three major ones, the Pa'al, the Pi'el, and the Hifil. And then, of course, you got Niphal and Hitpael. And so he gives you the very simplest characteristics that identify these. If there's nothing, if it's just the root letters, then it's the Kal. If there's a nun, and this has to do with the third masculine singular form, okay? And because when you get to the other forms, sometimes there's changes, like the nun assimilates, like when you get to the future tense. And but with the PL and the PUL and the HITPIL, there's that dogesh in the middle root letter. There's nothing else added in the PL or the PUL, but that dogesh is the main indicator, the dogesh in the third and the second root letter. And then the HITPIL has the obvious hey tav right up front, and then there is the one with the hey up front, which is the hefil. In terms of consonants, this is a very simple way to identify those various forms. Okay, that was just by way of review, and I think that we We got to this part right here, didn't we? Well, I don't think we got very far, did we? Oh, well, that was 15. I'm sorry. Dang, I wanted to go back here. I was already jumping the gun. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, because we kind of started this chapter 14 last week, and with this game... Name that Binyan, and in chapter 14, he gives us the simple, see, the same thing right there. I mean, because this is where I thought we were. That's why I was looking at this. It's the same thing. This is where we left off, page 291. Name that Binyan. Maybe we did cover some of this. But the process of analysis for Binyan is... also simple once you become familiar with the consonantal skeleton of the verb patterns. And that's what I was pointing out to you. The basic patterns and the consonantal structure. And then we looked at those five categories. And these simple questions. And you remember with the... the first in identifying the root, there was just that simple process right here for discovering the root. Okay? And you need to you'll need to be able to identify the root in order to look it up in the lexicon or the other resources that you'll be using. And here he gives you the simplest process for doing that. By way of review, locate the verb. That's the first step. And the second step is strip away all the extra prefixes and suffixes and vowels. Okay, that means like if it's a vav consecutive, take the vav off. If it's a future tense, you drop the prefix. If it's a past tense, you drop the suffix. And all the vowels. And so that would leave you with just the bare consonants. And he says that includes the prefixes from the Binyan pattern. You strip away the nun if it's Niphal, the hey if it's Hifal, the hit if it's Hitpael. Okay, then you identify the three consonant letters that would form a root. And most of the time, those three letters are going to be present. Today, towards the end of the material, we start to look at those categories where there are some changes, where there are some variations, where like the noon assimilates. These are called weak verb categories. I think Dr. Booth calls them gizra or gizrot, which are, and basically what they are is they have letters that drop off, the noon assimilates, they have letters that change, like the U changes to a Vav, or the Hey changes to a Yud in certain forms. But those are what's called the weak verb categories, and most of the verbs in the Hebrew Bible fall under that category. With the basics of biblical Hebrew, we learn the strong verb first, and then we apply that to the different weak verb categories. And that's why Dr. Booth recommends you learning the past tense of the verb and the future tense of the verb, the 3 MS of every verb. And he does that for us in his materials, and you'll see that in the 500 friends. With each vocabulary word, you'll see the past and the future. Because sometimes between comparing those two forms, you can see the change. You can see where the noon is assimilated, or the different changes that are affected by the different weak verb category. But most of the time, you don't need to go beyond step 3. And step 4 is where you reconstruct the missing root letters in order to arrive at the 3 root consonants. And I think we'll look at that a little bit more in the next chapter. But this is just the basic process right here. And then we work through some of the examples and the drill and the 2 drills, actually. And then we came to this. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Gedalto. Gedalto. To. Ah. Gedalto. Well, no, I don't think it is. Gedala. Okay, you grew it. Okay, which binyan is it? You can check the answers in the back of the book, actually, if you...
I
got it right. Gemel? Gedalot? You thought it was maybe Gedalot? Yeah, because they're all present there. So, according to his formula, you would strip off the vowels. Okay, we can take off this because it's a PL. You can tell that. I can tell that by the dagesh in the middle root letter. Ooh. I'm not sure about that. Because, I'm thinking that there is a hay there. I'm not quite sure about that. I'll have to, let me think about it, and then I'll get back with you.
Like you hear it, like he, or if it was like them that I might say, you don't.
Okay,
wrong.
That's right. Good, good idea. Okay, yes. The O, the Holam Vav, that is the third masculine singular objective ending. Okay? And so this would be a feminine Gedolah. So the hey, it would end with a hey. The hey is the third feminine singular ending. But when you add a suffix, a pronominal suffix to it, the hey changes to a tav. Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, but I don't remember any of the ending.
No, that would be, like she said, that is the word it. It's an objective suffix.
Is it the
yeah. That's the objective, the whole involve is an objective suffix. Yeah. Yes. Good. Thank you. Yep. Well, that's what you're going to encounter when you're encountering it in the text. It's going to be like that. You have a whole sentence there in one word. All right. Name that binyan. And in the footnote, he shows us that this is a strategy for identifying the binyan, the different verb stems. In chapter 15 is a fuller discussion of the features of the binyan, and there's a table of the verbs there too. We're going to look at that. I'm going to explain how to use that. Maybe today. You know how it is. Let's see. So, this process is a simple one. There are five basic categories. And then you have these five questions to ask. Okay? And the first question is, does the verb pattern rely only on root consonants with no consonantal addition to the pattern whatsoever? Okay? If so, then it is the kal binyan, or it's also called the pa'al, and he also includes the pa'el and the pa'ol. Some would separate those as different verb forms, but he includes them as subcategories of the kal and of the pa'al. And for example, you have Ra'a and Chafetz and Yachol. They're all Kal. And Ra'a is Pa'al, Chafetz is Pa'el, and Yachol is Pa'ol. And so you see that there, that's this right here. There's no prefixes or suffixes added to it. It's just identifiable. Each form is identifiable just by the vowels, the vowel pattern. But we're only focusing on the consonant as the easiest way to identify the binyan. Okay, the second question to ask is, does the verb pattern add a nun to the consonantal letters? If so, then it's the nifal. And there you have it right here. See the nun plus the root, the shoresh, the three consonantal letters. If it adds a nun, then it's a nifal. No other verb form does that. Okay? So then the third question, does the verb pattern double the middle root letter of the three consonant root? In other words, is there a dagesh in the second root letter? And if so, then it's PL or it's a PUL binyan. And for example, you have Bechesh, he looked for and requested, and Super, Sipar, he reported or was told. And both of these verbs have the double middle root letter that is marked by the dagesh. And he says, by the way, puel is simply the passive of the pl, and it's less than 1% of the Hebrew verbs are puel. So better to keep it together with pl. Yeah, and you have less to memorize there. So, and he explains in the footnote about pa'al, pl, the word for this one, and most of them, you know, they reflect the different characteristics, but you see here that the ein in pl, it doesn't have a dog s because you can't double, because it rejects it. It's a guttural. And this is what's called virtual doubling, actually, because nothing changes with the consonant under the first root letter. You just can't add a dagesh to a guttural. And by way of review, the gutturals are aleph, hey, chet, ein, and sometimes resh. So, and he kind of, you know, you see it in a transliteration, he's kind of spelling it out as though it were doubled. Okay, then the fourth question to ask is, does the verb pattern double the middle root letter of the three consonant root and add hit, the hey tav prefix? If so, then it's hit by L. And then you see that down there at the bottom. And that's probably one of the most recognizable, is because of that prefix, the hit prefix. And then the fifth question is, does the verb pattern add hey to the consonantal root letter? If so, then the binyan is hefel or hofel. And again, he points out that hofel is the passive of the hefel, and it's only found less than 1% of the time in the Hebrew Bible. So better to keep it with the hefel. And because the only difference is that first... well, incidentally, the U class vowel and the O class vowel, those are indicators of the passive anyway. And you see that in these two words here. But that's the simplest way, is by looking at the consonants apart from the vowels. You know, if there's nothing added, then it's kal. If there's a dun added, it's nifal. If there's a dagesh in the middle root letter, it's pl or puel, or hit pael. If it's the dagesh is there and there's a hit prefix, and then there's the one with a hey prefix, the hit pael and the hofal. Okay. So traditional names. I'm pretty sure that we looked at this. Woo. I'm pretty sure that we looked at this and a comparison between the active Shema and Nishma, and Diber and Dubar. The differences between the active and the passive meanings and the different patterns. I think we looked through this right here. I really appreciate his notes, you know, here where he says learning the binyan system takes repeated practice. Okay, and there's more details on that in chapter 15. The building blocks of vocabulary and the modified patterns, okay? And some students, they like to read, and this is in chapter 15, to read down the columns and to see how the pattern establishes a different binyan. Because you can see the pattern. And that's one thing that we learn in Basics of Biblical Hebrew is that these vowel patterns are consistent. So that you don't really need to learn every form in the paradigm. You don't need to learn a whole new paradigm, although that is helpful, according to Dr. Booth. You can learn it by learning the third masculine singular form of those of most of those, because the vowel patterns are consistent, and even with the weak verb categories, many times the verb patterns are consistently there. But those charts are helpful to kind of glance over, to kind of to get a feel for how it plays out in the various forms and the various conjugations, you know, whether it's a past or a future, or an imperative or an infinitive or participle. And you can see all the forms there because he gives you the vav consecutive. We'll look at that in a minute. But they're really helpful to see how that plays out. And also, I think we did cover this, but I'd like to cover it again. His final suggestion for all students is to memorize one basic regular verb by heart for each binyan pattern in both the past and the future forms. And that's why I recommend separating out those whenever he introduces these different binyan in Jonah, separating out those recordings and memorizing those. That has been helpful to me in learning to recognize the different binyans. And it's actually giving you a word that you're going to find in the Hebrew Bible. When we're working with the basics of Biblical Hebrew, we're working with the paradigm word katal, which means to kill, and you put it in everything. And in actuality, that's one of the words that Dr. Booth uses in those charts in chapter 15, which we'll see. He uses it for the strong verb for the kal. And that's one of the things that you can do over the summer is work on memorizing those, the different binyan five, really, is what you have to do. And you memorize them in the past and in the future. Okay, and that's what he does for us already in the recordings. But you can look at those charts in the back and you can see the other forms, like the imperatives and the infinitive construct. And when we get to 500 friends, then you see that too. You see the past, you see the future, and you see the infinitive over to the right in small print. Then, okay, using the past tense to recognize the binyan. And I think this is where we left off, I'm pretty sure. So, in general, roots of verbs in the past tense are easy to identify because there are no prefixes in front of the verb, okay, in general. And that's the lexical form, too. The dictionary form, the lexical form, is the third masculine singular, the cal perfect third masculine singular. And perfect is another way of referring to the past. Imperfect is another way of referring to the future. So this is talking about the cal past tense or the cal perfect third masculine singular. That's the lexical form. That's the one that that you would memorize within the basics of Biblical Hebrew. So here you have, and like the hitvael is usually obvious because it has the hit prefix. And most of the other past tenses have a characteristic rhythm with two syllables followed by a suffix ending. The past tense or the perfect is also called the suffix tense. The future is called the prefix tense because the past is primarily suffixes added, and the future is primarily prefixes added. So the regular Cal past tense has only two syllables within the root letters, and the first syllable has the comments, like halakti, I walked. If the past tense has only one syllable before the before the suffixes, it is a subcategory of kal. And these are called bicontinentals because there are only two root letter consonants. And the kal perfect 3ms of shav, you see that there. You see the shen, the comment, and the bet. He returned, and shavnu, we returned. Okay, well, the lexical form is going to be the infinitive form because they add. These are also called the hollow verbs because they add a letter to the middle of it, like it may be a hirik yod, you know, a vowel letter. Maybe a hirik yod, it may be a shurik. But he's pointing out here that this is also a kal, but there's nothing added to it, to the beginning or to the end. But when it's inflected, then you have a suffix. Yeah, but the two root letters are still there. Now you have the Nifel has a past, has a distinctive noon, and usually with a hirik, ni, and you can see the Nifelness of it. Nimlatu, they escaped. And the PL has the distinctive, and see what we're talking about here are the vowels now. How they were identified by the consonants, and now how they're identified by the vowels. And you can identify them by that vowel pattern. The first with the cal past, it's comets. With the nifal, it's a hirik under the noon, and with the pl, it's also a hirik. But the vowel under the first root letter usually has a dagesh. Well, yeah, you know the dagesh is there. So there's the hirik and the dagesh, and you see that in words like bekesh. And Devarenu and Mina. And all of these words are words that we learn from Jonah, from the materials that we were working with. Okay, now he points out that, however, the PL passed when there's a guttural letter. And this is what I've pointed out to you before. The gutturals cannot take the dagesh, and it may change the vowel. It may change the hirik to a sere. And also, a shava under the middle root letter can cause the dagesh to drop out also. And here you have berach, he blessed. And see, the resh cannot take a dagesh, rejects it. And this is what's called compensatory lengthening. It kind of compensates for the fact that it can't take a dagesh by lengthening the hirik to a sere. And bikshu, they looked for, okay, you see the shavah, It's a silent Shema under that root letter. So so it doesn't have a dagesh. The dagesh drops out because of that Shema. And finally, we see the hifel, which the past has a characteristic he, of course. And usually it has he, he, and rarely ha. Okay? So you're going to see it with a hirik, you're going to see it with a sagol or a sere, and the ha is the hatef vowel, the reduced vowel, the common the hatef patach. Sometimes that's the basic vowel pattern. Hishlik, himanta. Amanta, He'ala, and He'achlu, He'chalu, and He'chalu, sorry. Habenoti. I understood. I think I understand. Okay. So here we have the drills. Identify the binyan for these past tense verbs. Did you do that? Okay. We can do it together then. So the first one's already done for you. It's ha-chu. And the correct answer is kal. And we know that by the comments under the hay. Okay. And the number one, achat, kam. Okay, is it Kal, Nifal, Piel, Puel, Hitpael, Hifel, or Hofel? Kam. Hmm? Which one is it? Kal, yeah, it's bicontinental. And you see the comets, okay? The comets, that vowel is one of the identifying factors. Okay, Stein, Nigrasti. Nigrasti. Is it Kal, Nifal, Piel, Puel, Hitpael, Hifel, or Hofel? Nigrasti. Nifal. Yeah, because you take because you see the noon in the hirik, ni. That's the dead giveaway. Nigrasti. Shalosh. Shatach. Shatach. Yes, Kal. See, he makes it easy for us, huh? Kal. Because you see the comments. And the typical pattern for most Kal verbs is comets patach. And you'll see comets when you have like an aleph at the end, or a guttural. But the consistent vowel pattern is that comments. Okay. Arba. Yardu. Yardu. Cal. Do you agree? Yardu. Cal. Okay. Chamesh. Higid. It's easy. Higid. Which one is it? Okay, what do you see? Vowel pattern. You see a hirik under the hay, and you see a dagesh in the middle root letter. What does that tell you? Back up. Go back up. Right here. Alright. This distinctive hirik vowel under the first root letter and usually has a dagesh in the middle root letter is the PL. You see the pattern? Hirik, Dagesh. Hirik Dagesh. It's a PL. Hagid. Hagid. Higid. It's part of the root. You see, you take out the vowels and you're left with Hey, Gimel Dalet. The Hirik Yod is a vowel letter. Okay, Shesh, Barcha, Barcha. She ran away. Barcha. What do you see under the first root letter? And what does that indicate to you? Cow, sure. That's easy. I mean, that's the only one that it could be. And Barak is Bet Resh Chet, and the vowel pattern would be Kametz Patak, and because you've added the feminine, it's inflected for the 3ms, the Kametz Hey feminine ending, that causes the Patak to reduce to Shava. Barcha. Okay, Sheva. Kidamti. Okay, which one is that? Kidamti. What do you see under the first root letter? Huh? Okay, and what do you see in the middle root letter? Yeah, exactly. T is the pronominal suffix. I. Yes, it's PL. Because you see the Hirik under the first root letter and the Dagesh in the middle root letter. Dead giveaway. Okay, Shmone. Hitpalalna. What's the dead giveaway there? Hit palalda. Yeah, you see the hit. It kind of hits you right upside the head, doesn't it? Oh, there it is. And of course, you see the Hirik vowel and the Dagesh in the middle root letter. Also, you see those two. So that's hit pael. Tesha. Hit shava. Hishava. PL? Hishava. Yeah, because it's not a hey, it's a chet. Hishava. Yes, it's a PL. Do you see the Hirik? And you see the Dagesh in the middle root letter. But why is there Shava? Didn't we just read that if there's a Shava, it will it doesn't always happen, does it? If there's a Shava under a letter and it has a Dagesh in it, actually that Dagesh, you're really looking at two Shavas. The first one is silent and the second one is vocal. So when you see that Dagesh and you see a Shava under it, it's vocal. Okay, Hishava. Okay, because the shin is doubled, and also the shava is doubled. But you can't have two vocal shavas in a row. The first one will be silent, and the second one will be vocal. If there was no dagesh, then it would be silent, and it is a PL. See, he did. He most of them were Cal and PL, and the last one is a easy one. Nafal. Nafal. No. What's under the? Look at the vowels. Comets. Yes. That is a cow. Or Paal. Okay. Why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll keep working on this, recognizing the binyan in the future tense and the infinitive forms. And we may get through the end of this chapter. And I'll have to... we'll have to make a note to see where we're at when we finish. He makes reference to the value of continuing to learn, you know, and of being exposed to the different binyan forms. You know, initially, you know, you're learning the form, and so you're getting the explanation of it, but eventually you're just going to keep encountering it in the text so much so that it just becomes familiar, it becomes second nature. You can... you'll be able to pick it up immediately. Like when I looked at these, I could tell you it's a PL or it's a hit PL. I could tell you because just by virtue of the fact that I've been exposed to those various forms, mainly in teaching. Somebody once said, "Teach once, learn twice." Yeah. So, but now we want to look at the future tense and the infinitive forms, and recognizing the different binyans. So what we looked at was the past tense, okay, and that was pretty easy. With the future tense and the infinitive. They require a recognition of the characteristic vowel pattern for each binyan. And fortunately, there are several distinguishing points that help identify most binyans, so the patterns are consistent. Then he explains that the nifal prefix of the nifal, the nun prefix of the nifal, and the hey of the hefel and the hit pael will often be absorbed in a prefix, or they'll be, or they'll drop out. These letters will disappear and be replaced by the prefix of the conjugation. The hit pael future will preserve the hirik tav before the root, like Yitashet, he will consider. It's still recognizable as a hit file because that vowel is still there and the consonant is still there. It still stands out. So the hit file is usually the easiest one to recognize, you know, for that reason. But with as you pointed out, with the nifel and the hefel, the noon and the haze, he likes to think about them as being absorbed, or you can think about them as being dropping out. The hefel future, the infinitive, and the imperative. Okay, for the hefel, they will have an a vowel in the prefix that joins the root. So there you have Tashlik, Lachashiv, and Veyach Aver, Veyitalu, and Veyachel. Okay, and you see that with each one of them, it's an A-class vowel, whether it's a patak or a comment. Most of the time, it looks like it could be either one. But that will be the vowel pattern. That will be the vowel that's most easily recognizable that will indicate that it's the he fell, because the hay has dropped out in many of the cases, not with the infinitive construct, which you see there in the second example, but the hearing has been replaced with a comet in the future tense, or in the infinitive tense, or in the infinitive conjugation. Okay, so that's the hefel. Now the PL, it keeps its same basic shape as the past with a dagesh in the middle root letter. Okay, however, more distinctive in the narrative past tense and the future is the shava in the prefix. Okay? That is going to help you to recognize that it is the PL. Of course, the dagesh is still there. Okay? But it's that shava under the prefix that's going to indicate to you that it's a PL. And you can see that in the examples there. Now, one surprise with the PL, page 297, comes when the narrative past root has a yud as its third root letter. And the segol hay of the future will drop off when the dagesh drops off too, but the prefix remains a shava, so the shava is still there. And if you look at the footnote, he explains that verbs with a yud as a third root letter drop the yud in the 3MS pass in all binyan. And a hey is then written to mark the A vowel sound. And you see ra'a and from a root ra'i. This is this verb pattern is also called lamed yud lamed hay, or it's a third yud third hay. In the future, the original yud causes the final vowel to become a or e. And this too is written with a hey in all the binyan. Yer'e, yitzvah, yitzveh, and yer'e in every form. And I think it goes on. I think that's the end of that one. Okay. Then the nephal in the future tense in the infinitive, it may sound close to the PL. Okay, it may sound similar, but it will have a full vowel in its prefix and the dagesh in the prefix. In the first root letter. That is for the nephal. Okay? So you see, you saw it with the PL. It was a shava, okay. With a nephel, it's going to be a hearing. So see, the vowel pointing for the nephel is still there. That hearing is still there. Remember, it's noon hearing. The hearing is still there, only it's been assimilated. The noon has been assimilated as a dagesh in the first root letter. So the dagesh is not in the middle root letter. The dagesh is in the first root letter. And the vowel pointing for the nephal is still there. So the noon is really still there. It's just now it appears as a dagesh. See that with the examples there. Now please note, The Nephilim infinitive and the imperative will have a prefix with a hey. Okay, this is part of the Nephilim pattern. Have you seen it? Yes. Hilachem is a Nephilim. Lehilachem, to fight. Himlet, that's the imperative, escape. But that hay, and this is what's called a prosthetic hay. It's there to preserve the vowel pointings, okay? You see the vowel pointings are still there. You still see the hirik, and you see the dagesh. The dagesh is the assimilated nun, but the hay is there in the infinitive and the imperative to preserve the vowel pointings. And finally, the kal is the binyan that is left over. And it's the simple binyan without any extra root consonant. The kal future usually has one less syllable than the nephal. The prefix tends to have a hirik vowel. And the first root letter in the future tends to have a shava. Okay, so that's the pattern. You see the hirik under the nephal, but there is no dagesh in the first root letter. There is a shava, and it is a silent shava. Nispor. Yiktov. Yireh. Tishma. You see? And this is characteristic of the kal, is that hirik. And although he doesn't point it out here, a lot of times that holem there too will be characteristic of the kal imperfect 3MS. Okay, but he's just pointing out to us the prefix vowels, okay? And this the very basic patterns. Okay, now he also points out, however, there are many common verbs with root letters that may not appear in the kal. Okay, these are, it may help to know that these so-called irregular verbs are all trying to fit into the abstract binyan pattern, but one or more weak root consonants is causing some variation. These are weak verbs. And they either have a nun that assimilates, or a hay that drops off, or a yud that changes into a vav. And some of these are just, they're vav consecutives that we're looking at here. And by yipol, okay, that's not nafal, and you see with this particular form, the nun has been assimilated, and that's not nifal; it's just been assimilated. This is you see that pattern, the hirik and the holem. Okay, that dagesh in the first root letter is the nun. And then you have vayachom, and that is bicontinental. Remember, two root letters. And that is a weak verb category. And it's kam. He stood up. And you see the a variation of the pattern there. Yochal, that's a unique word, and it has that holem in the future tense. And that's just one that you have to memorize with that particular word. And it's common. We've seen it a lot already. And yuchal and vayuchal, vayire. So these are the weak verb categories. We'll look more at that in chapter 15. Where he fleshes that out, and when you come back for the basics of biblical Hebrew, we work on those. We can have a full explanation for those. But just you need to be aware of it. The following drill may be used as practice for applying some of these ways of guessing the binyan. And for a more complete description of the ways the weak consonants affect the binyan pattern, see chapter 15. Okay? And we will. But probably not today. So normally the students, they don't achieve a high level of control over this system until the second academic year of study. So, I mean, this is kind of like... it's like kind of blindsides you in the first year. Kind of it's overwhelming, the weak verb categories. But by the time you get to intermediate, you've interacted with Hebrew language quite a bit, so they become more familiar. You begin to see the patterns. And that's really what we're seeking to do as language learners. We're seeking to discern the patterns. So if it's kind of confusing and overwhelming at this point, just relax, that's normal. Yes. The yod with the dagesh. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that's part of the Vav consecutive. Remember the Vav consecutive? You have the Vav, the Patak, and the Dagesh. Kind of like the article. You have the Hey, the Patak, and the Dagesh. Yes, yes. And the Dagesh in the Pei, though, is the Nifal. I mean, not the Nifal. It's the Noon of the root, the Fall. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So, drill four. Let me see how much more we got. Yeah. Well, I know this stuff is kind of complicated. We have a lot to cover. Okay, I'll leave you to work with the drills. From here on. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to do it together. But we really want to get through we may not be able to get through this chapter. But check your answers in the back of the book. And if you have any questions, like you've had questions, be sure to write them down and we'll discuss them when we come back. Now, he says here after that exercise, you'll be able to improve your analytical skills if you occasionally practice this analysis when you're studying new words. Okay, so when you're encountering new vocabulary, you're encountering new words, then you can practice identifying the different binyan. All right? By just applying what we're learning here in this chapter. And he says one of the recommended way of continuing Hebrew learning after this book is to read through selected friends, selected readings with 500 friends, and whenever you meet a word that you're learning from a footnote or from a word list, you should pay attention to its binyan structure and its shoresh. Okay, so be sure to look for it and seek to identify its root and its stem, or its what kind of binyan it is. Yeah, shoresh is the Hebrew word which means root. Yes. Three letters, except with biconsonantals. It's two. But we've already learned that. So, there's a more complete summary. He keeps telling us this. of the weak verb consonants and the binyan, specifically in the section Hagizrot, the patterns of regular irregularities in verbs and binyans. Regular irregularities. Okay? So be encouraged. All right? I like that. Be encouraged. The binyan system will become clear for you in its season. For some, it comes quickly. For others, it comes after 1,000 to 2,000 words of Hebrew are learned. Okay? As you develop a degree of fluency. And it takes about 2,000 words for us to develop fluency in any language. So that's a good goal to be working towards. So, but in either case, you can continue to learn Hebrew and make good progress while the binyan system is settling in. And that's what happens, is it takes time for these grammatical concepts to take root, to be assimilated. You know, sometimes we need to see them, we need to work with them, and then we need to give it a rest. Sometimes when you're working on it and your brain hurts and you want to get it, you want to keep pushing on, but sometimes at that point it's better just to take a break from it and then come back and take a fresh look at it. You know, that's the value of the repetition and the review. Sometimes it just takes time for those concepts to sink in, you know, and after the initial exposure to them. That's why it's important to go back through this material again. That's why I think it's important to read through the grammatical explanations and the footnotes, whether you understand them or not, because in your second time through, they'll become clearer. And the third time through, the fog will lift a little more, and the sun will break through the dark clouds of
the table of contents on the break.
Yes.
Because I was trying to see where I would be able to have a list of things I could memorize. So I think it was chapter 6, 8, 9, 10, and 11.
For the different binyan? Yeah, of course, chapter 1, it has the past and the future.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to start. You see that?
Right.
And he gives you the participle, too, but you don't have recordings for the participle.
Do you think that will be only in the call
time? Yes, initially, yes. Okay, and then he explains in the next section, there's a drill for those who would like to try an intermediate level task. Figuring out the missing consonants of a root when only two or one of the root letters is visible. Sometimes that's the case. You know, you have the noons that assimilate or can't assimilate, the dageshes that drop out, and that's basically what he's saying here in this section here. Discovering the root when a root consonant does not appear. And we've had one of these words, and we'll look at it in a minute, but many verbs in Hebrew have forms where only two of the three consonants appear, and sometimes only one. And students usually need to be at an intermediate level and need to have a vocabulary of over 1,000 words before they can develop confidence in naming roots of words that have missing root letters. So considerable help can be attained when both the past tense and the future tense forms of the verb are already known. So that is the key. And that is the motivation for learning the future tense with the past tense. You know, when we get to basics of biblical Hebrew, you're basically learning the third masculine singular the Cal Perfect Third Masculine Singer. You're learning the past tense. But Dr. Booth, he puts it together with a future tense. So you have a fuller picture of the verb form. And so the following discussion and drills are beyond the beginning level. And success is only expected at an intermediate level. So this is something that you will fully get a grasp on later on down the road. But it's helpful to know about it. It's helpful to be exposed to it ahead of time. So before discussing some examples, it will help to list the continents that may be expected to disappear and to discuss their characteristics. So it's the following consonants tend to disappear. The nun, the vav, the yud, and also the doubled root letter, where the second root consonant is the same as the third root letter. That is, and you see the examples, savav and halal, where the second and the third root letters are identical. These are called geminates. Geminate means twins. They have two of the same kind. And while there are very few disappearing consonants, they appear frequently, and many of the most common verbs in Hebrew have one of them. Okay? So what is most irregular? This is a grammar rule. What is most irregular is most common. And what is, okay, so you're going to encounter it again. So here you have, the letter nun will frequently drop out when it ends or closes a syllable. Get that down. When it ends or closes a syllable, and it usually leaves a dagesh in the following consonant. The nun assimilates, like Yisa. And we saw that in the song that we sang today. I pointed that out, how the nun has assimilated. And it's the root nun, sen, and aleph, nasa. And this hypothetical form, yinasa, it doesn't occur. Instead, the nun is absorbed and assimilated into the following consonant, and the doubling dagesh is created. That's the dagesh forte. If the nun cannot leave a dagesh, it will usually cause its vowel to lengthen or change. Okay, that is if it's a guttural, then it rejects the dagesh and it causes the vowel before it to lengthen. This is called compensatory lengthening. Yechafetz. And then you see Yechafetz. It will be overturned. Is used instead of the hypothetical form Yinchafach. And Yechafach is Nifal. And of course, the hay cannot receive a dagesh, rejects it, and it causes the hirik under the yud, the performative consonant of the tense form, the prefix. The vowel underneath it should be a hirik, but it lengthens to a sarik, which is the pattern that has the nun added to the root consonant. Okay, that's the... And when it disappears, the nun cannot... I'll just explain that to you. So, please note, when a root is missing a letter, look for the dagesh, or the lengthened, unexpected vowel before the guttural letter. And the most common explanation is a missing nun. And your first guess about the root should be to reconstruct the nun in front of the dagesh after a lengthened vowel. So it's not what you would expect with a future. So your first guess would be that it was a noon. Okay, now with this category, the Vav and the Yud. And what happens is that the Vav and the Yud are especially weak and they may disappear anywhere in the root. And when they are the first letter in a root, and when they are the second letter of a root, and when they are the third letter of a root. So whether no matter where they fall, they may disappear. These letters, Vav and Yud, do not cause a dagesh. So there's no assimilation there. They just drop out. Said they sometimes disappear, and frequently they cause a vowel to be added. The Vav may create Shurik or Holam Vav, and the Yud may be written as a Hirik Yud or a Sere or a Sagol. For example, with the first root letter, Yasav. He said, Yashav, I'm sorry, Yashav. It shows the Yud in the first root consonant. Okay, that's part of the Shoresh. It's part of the root. And in the future, Yeshev, he will sit. Okay, you see two of the root consonants, the Shen and the Bet. But the Yud in Yeshev is actually the masculine prefix he. It's part of the prefix conjugation and not a part of the root letter. Okay, and the yud of the root has disappeared and it's caused the vowel under the prefix to lengthen to a sere. Okay, it should be a hirig, but it's become a sere. And the Yud or Vav as the first root letter will usually become a Holam Vav in the Nifal and the Hifal Binyanim, such as Notar was left from a root Yitar. Okay, that would be a Nifal. And Choshiv, he saved from the root Yud. Shen Ein. And then another example, for example with the middle root letter, okay, Kam, he stood up, shows only two root consonants. And the future, Yakum, he will stand up. So you see the difference between the past and the future? It reveals that the missing root consonant of Vav from the root kof, vav, mem. That's the lexical form. And it's also the infinitive form. And a related word from this root in the hefel shows only two consonants. Hakim, he established, he set up. And yakim, he will establish and set up from the root kuf, vav, mem. Notice, there's no dagesh in the root letters. Okay, for an example of the third root letter, Yud, consider Baniti, I built. Technically, Baniti shows three root consonants, Bet, Nun, and Yud. The Yud of the root has actually become a part of the first vowel. Okay, which is a hirik yod vowel. Okay, so that's a vowel, and it's not a part of the root. The U disappears in the 3MS, where the final vowel then becomes comments. And the vowel was written with a hey in ancient unvocalized text, bana. This is what's called the third hey, and this is pretty common. This is where you're going to encounter these kind of verbs. It's probably the most common weak verb category. The lamed hey, lamed hey, lamed yud. Third hey, third yud. The hey becomes a yud. Many people refer to this word as coming from the root bana. This is also correct, but it is the dictionary root. That's the lexical form. Since most dictionaries like to list the verbs in the 3MS past tense, that is the he did it form. Okay, still, bani, bet, nun, yud, is the historical root. So they used to be third yud, but they become third he. Okay? And that's why we refer to them as lamed yud, lamed he, third yud, third he. The future of this verb is yivne, he will build. It shows a different vowel in the final syllable, and it too is based on the missing yod. Okay, it's that's a third hey ending. We learn those in the basics of Biblical Hebrew. Again, this future was written with a hey in order to mark the e vowel. Okay, and then the sequential past of these verbs with a third root letter, they drop the yud, the final vowel, as in vayivin, he will build, so you don't see either a yud or a hey. Was there also a real consonantal hey in the third root letter? Yes. When the final hey is part of the historical root, it will be written with a dot that is called a mapik. We've seen that before. Gava. And he was tall. In the future, yigva. He will be tall or high. Come from the root, gemel, bet, hay. So where the hay was historically always a part of the root. So you'll see it written that way. And if there's a missing root letter and there's no dagesh and there is no guttural letter to balk the dagesh, then there is probably a vav or a yud somewhere in the root. Okay? So, I knew it. There's a lot of material to cover here. So we're going to stop on page 301. Okay? And there's still a little, there's not much more to cover in this chapter, and then we'll look at chapter 15 next week, okay? So page 301 is where we're leaving off. The double, go ahead, reread this again, and just let it soak in, you know? So why don't we close? Closes off in prayer. Nitvalela. Father, once again, we thank you for this opportunity to grow in our knowledge and understanding of the Hebrew language, that we might grow in our knowledge and understanding of your word, that we might grow in our knowledge and understanding of you. And we're looking to you, Lord, and we're trusting you to help us to assimilate these grammatical concepts. Lord, we pray that you would illustrate these concepts for us, that you would let us see them in the material as we're working through it, and that you would help us to make sense of it, Lord, that you would bring clarity into our hearts and minds. Let these concepts sink in, take root, and bear fruit in understanding. And Lord, we thank you for the helper. We thank you for the teacher. We thank you for the comforter. We thank you for your Holy Spirit. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Yevarachacha Adonai ve'ishmerecha. Ya'er Adonai panav lecha v'chonecha. Yisa Adonai panav lecha ve'yasem lecha shalom.